Welcome to Legal Talk. I'm John Mitchell, and today we're uncovering the legal insights and strategies that help you protect what matters most. You're watching Now Media Television.
Well, hello there, everybody. My name is John Mitchell. I am the host of your show today, Legal Talk, where we take complicated legal type stuff and, kind of break it down, make it a little bit understandable for everybody. I am so happy, pleased, overjoyed, in fact, to have everybody out there in the audience joining us today. Man, oh man, I know you have a lot of stuff you could be doing with your time right now. You could be, cutting the yard, clipping your toenails, but no, you are here in front of the TV watching the big show today. I'm so happy to have everybody with us, and thank you for joining, and I know that we're going to have some really good stuff to talk about today in the big show, right? So again, my name is John Mitchell, host of the show, and I, have been at this game, tax game, actually, for many, many years now, over 30, going on 35 years, I guess, right? I started off in 1990 as what they call an unenrolled preparer. Oh, my goodness. The tax business has been good to me over the years, and I'm so happy and pleased to be able to be in this business, to be able to help people, work their way through problems, whatever they might have, problem-wise with the IRS. And I got to thinking earlier today about about what I might be able to talk about today. And I was thinking back over the years and thinking about some of the bigger cases that I have handled, some of the kind of stuff that has left its mark or made its impression on me, so to speak, right? And so I got to thinking about one of the first big tax controversies I ever handled. Now, this was, this was probably back in about 2000. This was, probably about 1995 or 96. And I'd been in the tax game for a while, but this was the first big problem where somebody came to me with a stack this big of certified mail, right? Letters from the IRS. And they came and said, John, I got a problem. Maybe you can help me with, maybe you can't, right? Now, back in those days, I had not even, gotten my enrolled agent license. I had not gotten my master's degree, my NTPI. I had not done USTCP. I had not even gone to law school or any of that stuff, right? I was just this this guy in a storefront office that prepared taxes. But this customer, this client showed up over at my office, had this big stack of letters from the IRS, and he says, John, what can you do about this? Now, it turns out that this gentleman, Mexican guy, but just for sake of not disclosing identities or anything, let's just call him Bob Smith, right? So Bob shows up over at my office, got a big stack of letters. What can we do about this? Oh my God, turns out I have not filed my tax returns in 11 years. I say, okay, well, let's get started. Let's file those tax returns. All we can do, start filing them one by one. And I've described how we might move forward and how we would get started and et cetera, right? And long story short, this guy ended up saying, yeah, John, well, thanks for that, all that information. Thanks for the advice. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to get back with you, whatever, right? Which is fine, people, it's a big commitment, even back then, hiring me as an unenrolled preparer was not going to be exactly cheap, but, the guy's, going to think about it, that's fine. So he goes away, and a couple of weeks goes by, maybe as many as 3 or 4 weeks went by, it's a little bit of time, And the guy ended up calling me frantically one morning on my cell phone and says, John, you know, the IRS is here and they're talking about they're going to take my work trucks and I'm not going to have a truck to drive and et cetera, right? So I said, well, you know, and again, at this point, way back years ago, I'd not even, been through law school or anything. But I asked, well, can you put me on the phone with whoever the IRS guy is? Really kind of a nasty, kind of aggressive guy, not very nice. Of course, they're not there to be nice, which is fine. And so ended up being that I worked with the guy over the phone. I said, look, you don't want all these, nasty work trucks. You know, what are you going to do with these? You want the guy to file his tax returns and get right with the government, right? Do what he's supposed to do. Well, it turns out that the IRS had already on a lot of these years. So there's 11 years the guy has not filed taxes. A lot of these years, the earlier years, the IRS had already done SFRs, right? So substitute for return. And there was already, balance due supposedly, right? So they calculate this balance due. And I remember it was somewhere around $450,000, $480,000. It was between $400,000 and $500,000, right? And so I talked to the guy and long story short, I ended up making a deal with the IRS. Well, this is funny, though. When I went to the IRS for the first time for an appointment, and again, I didn't even have my enrolled agent license or anything at this time, and so I had to bring my client with me down to the IRS, and we went down there. And I remember this is the first time that an IRS person has really kind of gotten up in my face and been almost rude, right? And I remember this guy, gets right up close to me and he points at me like this and he says, John, your guy didn't file tax returns for 11 years. He needs to just pay, whatever it is we're charging him. He needs to just make an arrangement and pay it and that's it. I don't know where this came from, out of the depths of my soul. I said, no, he only has to pay what's the correct amount, and we haven't figured out the correct amount. So the guy says, well, you're telling me you want to file all these tax returns. I said, yeah. Now, this guy has not filed tax returns in many years, but he was a kind of a pack rat, right? Old Bob Smith, right? He held on to everything, right? So he had all these banker's boxes full of receipts and documents and all kind of stuff. And so this guy ended up bringing me in. So what we did is we met once a month down at the IRS office. And every month we had to go in. This was the deal that we made with them. We would go in every month and file a tax return. They're going to quickly give it the once over and send it in for processing, right? So I don't know if anybody out there knows this, but just like a FYI, right? If the IRS prepares your tax returns, you're not going to like the return that they prepared, right? It's going to show they're going to not put any of your dependents. They're not going to put any of your expenses. They're going to put gross income and then multiply it by whatever the tax rate is. And that's going to be, basically that's what they're going to do, right? They're going to charge you on the gross amount. They're not going to take any expenses into account, right? So one of the things that we ended up doing is taking the $480,000, I think it was, it sticks in my mind. So $480,000, we ended up lowering that down to, I don't remember, maybe $30,000 or so. So from $480,000 down to like $30,000. And that was over a course of right at about a year. We were showing up at the IRS. Every month we show up and, okay, well, let's do this year tax. okay, does this look good? Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, everything's okay. Send it for processing. And now I'll make an appointment 30 days later for the next one. And the next one and the next one like that. We finally got the guy all caught up. He ended up with a $30,000 debt instead of $480,000. So that was already a big win. And then we ended up making a payment plan for him. I don't remember, something like maybe $300 or $400 a month payment plan, right? And that was quite a bit difference from what he expected when the IRS came knocking on his door that morning saying, hey, you have the titles to your truck. Do you have the keys? We're going to, you know, we're going to take all your stuff because you haven't filed taxes and you haven't paid taxes, right? And so we ended up getting a really good result for him. So $480,000 down to about $30,000, and that $30,000 was, let's say, $300-$400 a month payment plan that we ended up getting for him. And I haven't talked to old Bob in many years now, but I guess he's probably doing okay, doing well for himself. And it was my pleasure to have that guy's case to be my first big tax resolution case. So that's how I got my started with an 11-year non-filer. They showed up at his house and knocking on the door, give me the keys to your trucks, give me the titles to your trucks, we're going to confiscate everything. And to end up getting a really good result like that, I think I kind of knocked it out of the park for that being my very first case that I ever worked on for the IRS. So in any event, that's kind of a story. And here's the moral of the story, right? Moral of the story, don't let things get that far out of hand, right? If you have tax returns and stuff you need to take care of with the government, go ahead. The best time to take care of that is now, so that you don't run into the agents knocking on your door at 7 a.m. asking for your truck titles, right? So I guess that's the big takeaway from this. Again, my name is John Mitchell. I'm here in Tax Attorney Extraordinaire here in the great city of Houston, Texas. I can be reached through my website, www.99-taxhelp.com. You can shoot me an email, attorneymitchell@pm.me, or you can go ahead and call on the phone, 1-800-99-TAX-HELP. And we're going to go and take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back right after this. Thanks for being here and stick with us. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome back to Legal Talk. Stay tuned to this show and every Now Media favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. Are you on the move? Well, we got you covered there too. Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. All right, so welcome back. I hope everybody had a chance to stretch your legs and take good advantage of that little commercial break that we took. And now we're back, and we've got some more good stuff to talk about, right? And one of the things that is an interesting thing in tax, right? Interesting to tax nerds like me, at least, right? So when is something like, let's say you fill out a tax return, all right? A 1040, most people know, but there's many different kinds of tax returns. But let's say you fill out your tax return, whatever that form may be, and you get ready to file that with the IRS. And, back in the old days, the old times when dinosaurs roamed the earth, right? We used to actually put our tax returns in paper envelopes. We print them out and sign them and, you know, send them off in the mail to the IRS. And, you know, that's the way things worked back in the early 90s when I was getting started in the tax business. We've gone electronic quite a bit now. But anything you're going to send to the IRS, and believe you me, plenty of stuff still gets sent to the IRS through the mail, right? United States Postal Service, right? You remember the guys with the blue uniforms and the big blue mailboxes, and you go and, you know, put a stamp on it. I'll tell you something funny. I had a youngster a couple of years ago. He asked me, so he was in my office and taking care of some stuff, and he says to me, John, he says, when you put those envelopes to stick them in the mail, right? You're going to mail this envelope out with this stuff in it. Why do you put that little flag sticker on the envelope? And so we went into a whole discussion, you know, the youngsters today, right? Like, I guess they haven't had much of an opportunity to use the postal service, to use the mail. But the guy asked me, why do I put the little flag sticker on the envelope when I'm going to put it in the mail? And, you know, we went into the whole thing about that's the stamp and everything, right? But back to my, kind of main point here, right? What if you get something ready, you put it in the envelope, you're going to send it to the IRS? When has that thing actually been filed with the IRS, right? When is it considered that you actually filed? Because, you know, taxes are full of rules and regulations, and one of the regulations always is a filing deadline, right? We all know April 15th, right? So April 15th is the filing deadline for individuals. So you're going to fill out your 1040 form, sign it, stick in the mail, whatever. You know, that's got to be done by the 15th, right? So, but how do they calculate that? How does the IRS determine when has the thing that you are filing, when has it actually been filed, right? And we take a little page out of the notebook of the law of agency. Now, when we talk about the law of agency, I'm not lose anybody here, right? I'm gonna, you know, make this, break it down, make it simple, and we're not gonna get all boring with all kind of legal stuff, right? But these are kind of important ideas to have a concept of, right? And so one of the things that we have is called a law of agency. And that means basically, like, let's say I own an apartment complex, right? And I put the manager in charge of the apartment complex. And the manager is in charge of collecting all the rents from all the people in all the apartments. And they're in charge of doing all the paperwork, making sure that that money makes its way, you know, cross our fingers. Hopefully it makes its way into my bank account, right? And so in that instance, the manager of the apartment complex, let's say I'm the owner, right? I'm the owner of the complex, but I got the manager doing the rent collecting for me. That manager is my agent. And without getting into a bunch of technical stuff, when you have an agent, you're called, like in this case, I would be called the principal. So I'm the main guy in the story, and I've owned this apartment complex, and the manager's managing it for me. Well, I'm the principal. That makes the manager my agent. An agent is somebody that stands in the shoes of somebody else and acts for them, right? And so the law of agency, one of the important parts about this, you hear sometimes in lawsuits, you'll hear respondeat superior, right? That's, let's say a truck driver is driving erratically. They drive in crazy. They hit you on the side of the road, right? They sideswipe your car. But let's say that driver is a UPS driver. Well, when you sue somebody, you'll sue the guy, but the main deep pockets here, the thing you really want to do is sue UPS. because the guy, the UPS driver, you know, who knows how he's set in life, but where the big money is, where you might, you know, get some bang for your buck is from UPS, right? And UPS is on the hook. Why? Because they hired this guy. They made him their agent. And so he's acting on their behalf when he's out there, you know, delivering all those packages. And so the agent is, you know, the principal is responsible for the acts of the agent, right? So the agent screws up and sideswipes somebody, the principal, which is the company that they work for, have to pay the cost. Right. And so in this case, you got two different government agencies. Right. You got the IRS, who needs to get their tax check and their brief, their their tax return, the paperwork, whatever it is you're sending them. They need to get their stuff. But at the same time, you got the U.S. Postal Service. And so the Postal Service in this case is acting as an agent for the IRS. So the way this works, there's a rule called the mailbox rule. So if I have a tax return or a check or whatever it may be, and I'm going to send that to the IRS, I can go and drop that off by certified mail. Right. And I have the post office stamp my little green, mail-in receipt. Right. And I put that in my pocket. I don't lose it, right? I don't spit out my bubble gum and throw it away, you know, because what would be the use of it, right? So you need to keep that little receipt because the post office stamped that receipt and they took your envelope and lost it and rerouted it. They sent it to three different cities. You don't care. Right? Because the law with the mailbox rule states that when you dropped off that envelope and put it in the hands of the postal guy, it's exactly the same under the law as if you put that in the hands of an IRS agent. Right? So the law says that the IRS received that tax filing, whatever it may be, a check, a tax return, information that they asked you for, whatever it is. If you file something with the IRS, you drop it in the mailbox of the U.S. Postal Service or actually UPS or FedEx, but not every level of service, right? For the most part, think about it as the Postal Service, FedEx and UPS, right? If you get the fast one, the next day delivery, the good service, right? Or just first class mail, right? Certified first class mail. And that's why I always send stuff that I'm going to send to the IRS. I always, always send it certified mail because I've got that little receipt. It's stamped with the nice red little stamp that the post office uses. And now I have proof that that thing that I was supposed to file by the 15th, I got a stamp on a little green piece of paper that says the 14th, and I'm good to go. Right? Because I've now done my part. I can't control how long it takes the Postal Service to deliver that to the IRS. I don't know. Don't know and don't care because the law says I filed it with the IRS when I handed it over to to the Postal Service, right? And that's called the mailbox rule. Now, just real quickly, I'll take like less than 1 minute and tell you this. Recently, like as of last year, there's been a change, and not to the IRS's regulations, but to the Postal Service regulations. And they do not necessarily put a postmark if you go to the post office and drop your letter off in the little blue box and drive off, they might not get that postmarked the same day. So if you're up against the deadline, right, and you know that you need to have this in because there's going to be fines or whatever, absolutely make sure that you go, if you're up against a deadline, walk inside the post office, hand it to the clerk and tell the clerk that you need to get a hand post postmark, right? They can postmark it. They'll take out their little stamp and they'll stamp it and you'll be good, right? And they'll stamp a receipt for you and you keep that, and that way you know that you're doing well. But that's a brand new thing. Postal Service used to put today's postmark on anything that they receive today, and they've kind of backed off of that. But if you, long story short, if you're sending something to the IRS, handing it to the post office is the same as handing it to the IRS, and make sure that you get that little green paper stamped so you have proof that you did it right. So my name is John Mitchell. Thanks again. Tempest Fugit, time flies. Happy that you're with us here on the big show, and we are going to take another quick break, and we will be right back after this.
We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Legal Talk. My name is John Mitchell. I am the host of the show, tax attorney extraordinaire here in Houston, Texas. Been at this game for quite a number of years now, going on like 35 or so years that I've been dealing with tax and dealing with the IRS and tax stuff. Oh my goodness. I got a brother, he's a mechanic, and he told me, John, he says, I don't understand how you do it, right? He says, I would go crazy. I think I would slit my wrist. I think I would off myself if I had to sit behind a desk every day and deal with all that paperwork, man. I don't know how you even do that, right? Now, me, I'm thinking, I don't know how you climb up under those damn greasy cars all the time and tighten bolts and do whatever mechanics do, right? But, thank God that we've got, I guess you'd say kind of everybody's got their talent, right? I remember when I was in Mexico, they used to have a saying. I was working down there and going to law school, and they would say, cada chango su mecate. And so that means translate that to English, every monkey has to swing from their own branch, right? And so I guess everybody does what they do best. And so thank God that, the life and the world is full of all different kinds of people with all different kinds of talents. Thank God for that, right? And so my talent is taxes. And, I was thinking about different stories that I could tell, different things that would be kind of interesting to folks out there. Now, the audience of this show, I think, is a lot of you are business people, right? A lot of people that are watching the Now Media Network, the nowmedia.tv. It's business people, right? This is a business-focused network. And so if you own a business, you are probably pretty likely that you got some people working for you, right? You got some workers. And I didn't say the E word. I didn't say employees, because maybe you have employees or maybe you don't. A lot of people have, or they claim that they have, independent contractors, right? And so I will tell you this kind of interesting story about a guy that showed up in my office. Geez, we are 2026 as I record this. I'm going to say it was maybe 2019 or so. I think it was before COVID. So right before COVID. So let's say 2019, right? So the guy shows up again in our conference room where I was working. Shout out to the Cantrells. I was working at Cantrell & Cantrell here in beautiful Houston, Texas, a tax law firm. And this guy walks in. He's in our conference room. He's got obviously he's got the big obligatory stack, like a stack this thick of certified mail from the IRS. And this guy is getting audited. He's getting an examination, but he's getting a special kind of examination, right? They're not, going through checking receipts, how much did you spend on paper clips this year, right? No, this is a specialized examination. I shouldn't really say audit. It's really an examination. There's a technical difference between those two terms. But in any event, so the guy's getting an examination, and it's a what they call a worker classification examination, right? So here's the deal. The guy's got these crews of people. Now, this is a construction company, right? In fact, this particular one was a masonry company, I remember. So that's the folks that go out and put, when the home builders are building a home, that's the guys that go out and put either bricks or maybe rocks or whatever on the front of the house, right? To make it kind of look nice, right? And so this was a masonry company, a big masonry company here in the Houston area. This company, in fact, was right at around like $1 million a month. It was the kind of volume that they did, right? And I'm not giving anything up here because I'm not naming any names, but big-ish kind of masonry company here in town. And so they had crews of people. Many, many crews of people, like a couple of dozen crews. And these crews would say like maybe four or five guys would go out and, put the bricks or the rocks on the front of around the outside exterior of the house, right? And so then they would get finished with this house, they'd move on and do the next house, the next one, next one. They were getting hired, actually. Obviously, if you don't know how this works, they weren't getting hired by the individual homeowners or even the people that they're buying the houses, whatever. They were getting hired by the builders, right? And so what these folks would do, this company that I ended up representing, they would send these crews of people out and just go from house to house and put up either the rocks or the bricks or whatever it may be on the exterior of the house, right? Now, in construction, at least here in the Houston area, it's very common that you'll have folks working on what we call 1099. So the boss will not take money out of the paycheck. The boss will give you, let's say he's offered you $25 an hour and you work 10 hours. Well, that's $250, right? And so he gives you that maybe at the end of the week or whatever, and you are responsible for calculating and paying all of your own taxes out of that money. So it's not like you're getting a W-2 with taxes held out of your money. You're getting the gross amount, and then you go deal with the IRS. Well, the problem is the IRS does not necessarily like that very much. The IRS prefers that people get money taken out of their payroll every week or every 2 weeks or whatever the case may be. And so they got this big push for that, because what happens, a lot of these guys, they'll get their gross amount of money and then just either not file taxes or file something, not pay, or take a bunch of bogus deductions or whatever the case may be, right? So IRS kind of prefers that everybody have taxes withheld, right? And so that's kind of a tension there, right? They hope everybody does this, and the companies and even the workers, a lot of them prefer to have the thing with the 1099s and they get their gross amount, right? Anyway, long story short, what ended up happening, this guy came in and he had letters that he was being audited, he was getting examination, and I remember this very vividly, because this company does $1 million a month. That's their gross, right? But they don't put $1 million a month in their pocket, because they got materials and expenses and employees and other workers that aren't employees, et cetera, et cetera. So, so the guy ended up telling me, he says, John, you have to win this case. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to convince the IRS that no, these are not employees. We should not be taking payroll taxes out of their checks every week. These are workers that are independent contractors. And so a lot of times, even if the boss and even if the worker both agree that they're independent contractors. Well, the IRS is not bound by that. And sometimes they come along and they try to get do the withholdings and stuff. What ended up happening was the guy told me, John, you have to win this because if you don't, if I have to start paying these guys with W-2 and I have to start taking taxes out and all this other stuff, it's going to screw up my whole cost structure and I'm not going to be able to bid on jobs and win the jobs because all my competitors are still going to be hiring independent contractors, and I'm going to be at a disadvantage. So if you lose this case, John, no pressure, right? No pressure. But if you lose this case, I probably am going to have to just shut down my company, throw in the towel, call it a day, right? So like I said, no pressure, right? And the IRS, oh my goodness, they were really hot and heavy because they were sending a group manager. Every time we'd have a meeting, they'd fly a group manager out from the Los Angeles area, you know, to Houston to meet with us. And this was actually ended up being a pretty big deal. But at the end of the day, we did a really good job because there were, let's say, 200 people involved in this over a 3-year period that they were examining. And they ended up, the IRS reclassified one person from an independent contractor to a W-2 employee. And my client agreed that they should have been classified because he had changed jobs and they just never took him off the 1099 payment cycle, and they did not ever put him on a W-2. And so that was just a mistake. But in any event, that is one of the big ones. And that was worth several million dollars. If I lost that case, this guy, I mean, not only is he going to pay several million, at least $4 or $5 million that was going to cost him. Because again, they were doing 3 years worth of examination, right? And so that was going to cost him a lot of money. And as well, moving forward, his cost structure for his business is going to be all screwed up. And so we ended up getting a good, a good result for that guy. But word to the wise, of course, when you're doing business and you're going to hire people, pay close attention to how you hire them, how you train them, how you fire them, how you pay them, all this good stuff. I am available for consults, again, www.99-taxhelp.com or 1-800-99-TAXHELP. And my email address, probably the best way to get a hold of me, attorneymitchell@pm.me. And I will be happy to help you. If you're starting a business, I can help you to set things up so that you have a higher probability of being okay with the IRS and not getting any penalties. All right. So we're going to go to a quick break. I'm a little long, but we'll go to a quick break and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more practical, real-world legal guidance. This is Legal Talk on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm John Mitchell, and you're watching Legal Talk on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Welcome back to Legal Talk. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. You can download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. All righty, man, oh man, we are bringing this big jetliner in for a landing now, man. Segment number 4, oh my goodness, I'm having a great time. Tempest Fugit, time flies when you're having fun, right? And I hope that you folks out there have, been kind of entertained and gotten some good information from this, because that's what we're here for, right? We do Legal Talk, we just take, complicated things and break them down, make them simple so that everybody can, get something out of it, right? So today has been kind of a story day. I did talk about the mailbox rule a little bit, but I told a couple of stories. And I've got one more kind of interesting. I've got several more, but I got time for one more story today, right? And it turns out this happened. Now, this was after COVID, so this is a little bit more recent. And I'm guessing this was probably about 2023 that this took place. And it went on for several months because, I usually tell people sometimes, I had a client, I've had a couple of times clients told me, John, the IRS must hate you. Right. And they think that, and I understand why they think that. IRS must hate me because I stand up for my clients and make sure that their rights get respected and all that good stuff. Right. But actually, I tell people, no, look, I understand why you would think that. But actually, the IRS likes dealing with me. Why? Because they have a job to do. Right. And I worked for the IRS, so I know this is the case. They come in every morning. They've got a stack this big of work on their desk that they need to get through, right? And if they have to deal with Joe Smith, a taxpayer who is, let's say he's a plumber, right? The guy could be a savant, right? The guy could be the best plumber in the world, but he's not going to understand taxes. And so if the IRS person has to deal directly with Plumber Joe, right? Well, it's going to go kind of slowly for them because they're going to have to stop and let Joe catch up, and they're going to have to explain things. They're going to have to explain the rules and regulations and all the whys and wherefores, right? But if Joe hires me to go fight his case at the IRS, the IRS folks, especially here in Houston, they know me, right? Because they've seen this face in front of them several times, right? And they know when they see John walk in the door, they know that they don't have to slow down and explain things, right? They don't have to tell me how taxes works, right? They don't have to tell me, oh, let me read the taxpayer bill of rights to you. You have the right to competent service. You have the right to be heard and understood. No, they don't have to go through all of that. John knows the taxpayer bill of rights, right? And so the IRS guy can kind of light up a little bit. He can kind of be, oh my goodness, today is going to be, this case is going to move along faster, right? Because I got John here. He knows what's up. I don't have to stop and explain things. So the IRS, when you have your case in front of the IRS, let's say they're charging you $100,000. To you, that is very deep and personal, right? Because that's your $100,000. Now, don't forget that on the other side of the table, the guy at the IRS, that's not his money, right? And I don't want to go so far as to say he just doesn't care, but there are different levels of caring, right? And he might not care whether you pay $100,000 or pay $50,000 or whatever. What that guy at the IRS wants, really more than anything, he wants to get that file off of his desk. I remember when I went to work for the IRS as an appeals officer, my on-the-job instructor, they call it OJI, my on-the-job instructor told me, John, if you want to be successful in the IRS with the Independent Office of Appeals, you got to keep one thing in mind, right? You got to know how to get the cases, move it off of your desk as quickly as possible and make them stay gone, right? So that's kind of the motivation that, and a lot of times these people at the IRS, they're not, they want to do a good job. They want to get the number at the end of the report, they get it correct, right? Whatever. But that's kind of their main objective, to get the work done and get it out, because that's what they get graded on, right? If you're in the IRS and you're too slow, then that's a problem. You can get in trouble for that, right? But you're not going to get in trouble for, you know, hey, the taxpayer came in and proved to me that he really did have all those deductions, and so I wrote it back down to everything to zero, and he owes no money, right? If that's the way it is, that's the way it is. And the managers don't care about that. The managers care about moving the inventory, they call it, right? But sometimes you do get a crazy person. And I'm not going to embarrass anybody by naming names here, but there was a certain revenue officer that I had dealt with on this one particular case that I'm thinking of. And he was just this very aggressive and very unlikable guy, right? And not only that, he broke the rules. He went to visit my client, pounding on the door at 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, just crazy behavior. He went and flashed his IRS ID to the neighbors and spoke to the neighbors, my client's neighbors. He went and talked to them in a way that kind of made them fearful, that made them think that this guy is some kind of criminal, or he's in trouble with the government, or whatever, you know, stuff like that. This is the one time in my professional career where I have involved a part of the Treasury Department known as TIGTA, T-I-G-T-A. Look it up, the Treasury Inspector General. And that is the police that police the police, right? Those are the guys that if you complain to them and you have a valid complaint, they're going to come down on that IRS person. And that IRS person could either possibly, you know, maybe lose their job, or they could get demoted. They could get suspensions. They could even end up getting criminal charges filed against them if the thing that they've done is bad enough. Right. And so you are not playing when you get TIGTA involved. And I never had done that before. We ended up making some reports to TIGTA about this revenue officer, because this guy was just so kind of mentally imbalanced, right? Like I was seriously starting to get worried for the safety of my client, because I thought, maybe is this revenue officer, is he unbalanced? Is he going to show up at my guy's house with a gun and try and kill the guy or something, right? Like this was just a crazy thing. But that, you know, by the way, I'm in the city of Houston, but this all took place in Austin, right? This capital of Texas. And I have clients all over, even in other states and even in other countries. But this case, we ended up dealing with this case for something like 2 years. And this guy owned some restaurants, a chain of restaurants / convenience stores, right? And so he had these restaurant and convenience stores in the Austin area, got into some trouble, fell behind with payroll taxes. In the end, we ended up getting this guy a good result, but we ended up making an offer and compromise. And they had been coming after this guy for something between 1.5 to $2 million. And I think we ended up settling for something in the range of either $100,000 or $150,000, right? Which is still a lot of money, but it was a lot better. You know, it's 10 times better than what the IRS was originally trying to get out of him. But we fought that case for a good 2 years, and I was really, you know, concerned about some different points in the process. I was concerned about the safety of my client, because I thought maybe this guy is going to go crazy and do something violent, right? Ends up he didn't. He went on and got promoted within the IRS. Go figure. So, you know, all's well that ends well, I guess. I've never run across him again. But that's one of my stories. There's a million stories in the Naked City, so says the saying, right? But I am John Mitchell, tax attorney extraordinaire here in the beautiful city of Houston, Texas. 1-800-99-TAX-HELP or www.99-tax-taxhelp.com. attorneymitchell@pm.me. If you want to get a hold of me, that's the way you do it. Thank you very much for being with us, and we will be back with you next time on Legal Talk.